The air was unseasonably chilly. Thick charcoal-gray clouds hung low over Andrews Air Force Base, but in spite of the dreary weather, Mike Rogers felt terrific. The 47-year-old two-star general left his black 1970 Mustang in the officer's parking lot. Stepping briskly, he crossed the neatly manicured lawn to the Op Center offices. Rogers' light brown eyes had a sparkle that almost made them appear golden. He was still humming the last tune he had been listening to on the portable CD player. It was Victoria Bundanas's recording of the 1950s David Seville ditty, Witch Doctor. The young singer's low, torchy take on ooey-oo-ah-ah was always an invigorating way to start the day. Usually when he crossed the grass here, he was in a different frame of mind. This early, dew would dampen his polished shoes as they sank into the soft soil. His neatly pressed uniform and his short, graying black hair would ripple in the strong breeze. But Rogers was usually oblivious to earth, wind, and water, three of the four ancient elements. He was only aware of the fourth element, fire. That was because it was bottled and capped inside the man himself. He carried it carefully as though it were nitroglycerin. One sudden move and he would blow. But not today. There was a young guard standing in a bulletproof glass booth just inside the door. He saluted smartly as Rogers entered.
"Good morning, sir," the sentry said.
"Good morning," Rogers replied. "Wolverine." That was Rogers' personal password for the day. It was left on his GovNet email pager the night before by OpCenter's internal security chief, Jenkin Nguyen. If the password did not match what the guard had on his computer, Rogers would not have been allowed to enter.
"Thank you, sir,"
the guard said, and saluted again. He pressed a button, and the door clicked open. Rogers entered. There was a single elevator directly ahead. As Rogers walked toward it, he wondered how old the airman first class was. 22, 23. A few months ago, Rogers would have given his rank, his experiences, everything he owned or knew to be back where this young sentry was, healthy and sharp, with all his options spread before him. That was after Rogers had disastrously field-tested the regional op center. The mobile high-tech facility had been seized in the Middle East. Rogers and his personnel were imprisoned and tortured. Upon the team's release, Senator Barbara Fox and the Congressional Intelligence Oversight Committee rethought the ROC program. The watchdog group felt that having a U.S. intelligence base working openly on foreign soil was provocative, rather than a deterrent. Because the ROC had been Rogers' responsibility, he felt as though he'd let Op Center down. He also felt as though he had blown his last, best chance to get back into the field. Rogers was wrong. The United States needed intelligence on the nuclear situation in Kashmir. Specifically, whether Pakistan had deployed warheads deep in the mountains of the region. Indian operatives could not go into the field. If the Pakistanis found them, it might trigger the war the United States was hoping to avoid. An American unit would have some wiggle room. Especially if they could prove they were bringing intelligence about Indian nuclear capabilities to Pakistan, intelligence that a National Security Agency liaison would be giving Rogers, in the town of Srinagar. Of course, the Indian military would not know he had that. It was all a big, dangerous game of three-card Monty. All the dealer had to do was remember where all the cards were and never get busted.